Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay.
So, to start it off, do you think you could introduce yourself, kind of talk about either your education and your career related to sustainability?
Sure, I can do that. Thanks. So, my name is Melissa Neighbour and I live currently in Sydney, Australia. I've lived in most capital cities in Australia. I love it here. So my first sort of real education that was very environmentally focused was my first degree in environmental town planning. So by the time I decided to study at uni, I'd already spent a couple of years outside of high school, and I'd seen a lot of social injustice, I'd seen a lot of environmental degradation, and I knew I wanted to do something to make a positive change. So I wanted to do town planning. I believe that would be a good vehicle for that. Going back, this was 2002 when I first enrolled in uni. So it was quite a while ago. And the degree that I chose, town planning, didn't typically have an environmental edge to it. There was only one degree in Brisbane I studied in Australia that had an environmental edge to it. So they had an environmental town planning degree. And so I chose that one because I really wanted to make sure that I had that environmental part of it covered as well. And that's where I first learned about climate change. So we had one course in there that was done on it was climate change and local councils and what they could do. So policy writing and things like that. But before we got into that, I just remember the tutor who talked to us about climate change and the gravity of the way he delivered the information about climate change and how serious it was. It just stayed with me. And this was at a time when there was not a lot of media coverage about climate change. People really were not talking about it. So it was like it really hit me quite hard. I mean, credit to him because he certainly motivated and inspired everyone in that class. And that stayed with me, certainly has. I also just education related was lucky enough to get a scholarship for a course that's run here in it's not run anymore. It's actually finished, which is a shame, but it's called the Centre for Sustainability Leadership. And that's where I learned about things like theories of change, how to be persuasive, how to be an empathetic leader, the business case for sustainability. So it was teaching those skills about how to get cut through in this field, because as we know, it can be seen as an inconvenience. It can be seen as, costly. So it was really about trying to debunk a lot of those myths and find the way through to make sustainability a mainstream and part of our lives, whether it's business, politics, or our daily lives. So that was a very powerful course, and it certainly just motivated me more to, again, just keep going in this field. But yeah, going back to the town planning. So I graduated, and I went into the field of town planning, and I did that for about 4 years. But what I found was the projects I was working on were not fully sustainability focused, and a lot of them sometimes were just about money. And I was getting quite disheartened because what they didn't tell me at uni was that town planning in reality is not exactly how it is in theory. So in theory, we got taught all the good town planning elements, such as planning for community, planning for the environment, planning for the economy to boost local economies. But in reality, that holistic approach wasn't happening, and it was quite politically driven. And because political cycles are on short time frames, it didn't really match the long-term time frame that planning for a city or a town or for people needs. So I started to get pretty disheartened, and it happened pretty quickly. I was like, right, this is not what I signed up for. Rose, you're still at uni, so you haven't had that sort of real world experience yet. But I think it is quite common. I think a lot of people do go through it. But for me, I lasted 4 years, and then I went, right, I'm going to quit. And that as I said, that my tutor who taught me about climate change, that had really stayed with me. So I was like, right, I'm going to become a climate change activist. This is where I'm passionate. This is where I want to make change. I was just had a lot of energy in me to take that on. So that was quite a turning point in terms of my career and what I was doing. So I ended up co-founding a charity, which was called Project Survival Pacific. That's still around today. Our focus was the Pacific Islands. And that's because here in Australia, our neighbouring countries are the Pacific Islands. And we found that there was a real moral injustice here because these islands are on the front line of climate change. They are being terribly affected by weather and also sea level rise. And the worst part of it is that none of those countries are the main causes of emissions. So they're suffering the worst consequences, and yet they're not really the biggest contributors. So we wanted to give them a voice on the world stage, and we wanted to, similar to what I learned at the Center for Sustainability Leadership, those skills, we actually found leaders, young leaders within the Pacific Islands, and gave them the skills they needed rather than us trying to help the islands. We wanted them to tell their story. So we fundraised, we went to the negotiations around, the COP negotiations that happen in each country. Like Paris was the most notable recent one, but our first one we went to was in Copenhagen. So that was really, really, I was finding it really fulfilling, which was great. But the main problem was that it wasn't bringing me much money. And I realized I needed to survive. So I ended up having a son in the meantime as well. My beautiful son, Max, he's now 6. Realities of life, I had to face those and look after my responsibilities. So I thought, right, I do love town planning. So I'm going to go back to town planning. And I was lucky enough that I managed to, in the meantime, sorry, before I went back to town planning, I've actually just missed a little chapter, I just realised. Before I went back to town planning, after the climate change, I did a little bit of research in Australia around where I thought there were some businesses that or industries that hadn't quite got onto the sustainability bandwagon yet, that weren't actually integrated. There was no sort of sustainability component to how they were working. And because I had the town planning background and my interest is in property, I thought I'm going to look at the real estate sector. And I looked at the commercial real estate sector, and the government actually were doing quite a lot in that space in terms of requiring, implementing new mandatory legislation for sustainability. But the residential real estate sector had pretty much nothing. And so what I did was I wrote a white paper to one of the largest real estate companies here in Australia. It's a franchise network, LJ Hooker. They have 700 offices across the country. And I wrote a white paper to the management board on how I thought that they could get competitive edge by incorporating corporate social responsibility into their business case, and also how they could have influence in the industry. So a job was created for me out of that, which was really exciting. Yeah, I became the first sustainability manager for a residential real estate company in Australia, which was pretty exciting. But it was also a big responsibility because I was carving out a new path and I also had to make it work.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of pressure. So what I did first was all the normal corporate social responsibility stuff, got the emissions down and electricity use down in the offices and that type of thing, which was great. And a lot of the franchise offices had some really big cost savings. So from a business perspective, they were really happy and there was a lot of buy-in from the company. But then we thought about how can this company have a bigger impact in the industry that it's in? And in Australia, pretty much predominantly in any country, most of the housing stock is existing compared to new builds. And depending on when the legislation comes in for new builds to be sustainable, depends on how green, I guess, the existing housing stock is. our legislation in Australia for that sort of came in really, well, I know in New South Wales, where I live here, came in around 2004. So most of the housing stock here is pretty, you know, high energy use, using high water use. It's really unsustainable. And so what we realized is real estate agents who sell homes have a moment to actually go into, you know, people's lives and can actually provide information about sustainable homes and encourage people to upgrade them and explain the benefits. So much of this is about education. And so we trained real estate agents how to identify and then market and sell the sustainable features of a home. So it gave them an extra way to sell homes, and it also gave them tools to educate people to go, hi, you just bought this home. Here's some things you can do to upgrade it to make it environmentally sustainable. Or, oh, you're selling your home. You're doing a renovation. Yeah, why don't you incorporate sustainability into it? So they're really at a pivotal moment. And that training framework, it actually ended up being sold here in Australia to our biggest government research body. So they wanted to take this framework because they could see the potential it has in reducing emissions from homes and therefore get bringing down our carbon emissions and reaching our target. So they bought, the IP from LJ Hooker. So that was pretty exciting. It's the first time that the CSIRO, which is the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, that was the first time they've ever bought IP, because they're typically an R&D research and development organization. So that was pretty amazing. So that's in the process of being rolled out in Australia at the moment, which is exciting. But yeah, I did end up going back to town planning, and that's where I am now. And I'm very happy in town planning. And I also now get to tutor at Sydney Uni in sustainability as well, which is exciting. So that's a very long answer.
No, that's awesome. That sounds so exciting. Could you actually go into more depth about what town planning is specifically?
Yeah, sure. So town planning is really the framework that allows a city to, or facilitates and guides growth and property development and development of facilities and services in a city. So I don't work in government. Actually, I'm lucky enough to work for myself, which is great. So my clients are developers, and when they want to build a new building, usually green, which I inform them about, they need to get council approval. And so I help them to interpret what the legislation is and what the controls are that will be the parameters for what they can and can't build. And then I get them the stamp, all going to plan, and they can go ahead and build what they want to. So that's my role. But there are, if you work for government, you would either be on the other receiving side of those development applications and be stamping them based on the controls, or you'd be in strategic planning, which is really an exciting, more exciting because that's where you actually start to look at the controls and revise the controls and plan for the future. Okay, how, you know, do we need hospitals here? Where do we need a convention center? What do these people need? Or how can we best provide affordable housing? It's all those kind of questions. Yeah. Explain it?
Yeah. No, yeah, it does. You said that you majored in it, and I never even heard of, I don't even think that's an option here, at least at my school now. So that's awesome that it is.
Yeah. No, look, I'm glad you asked that question. Look, you're not the only one. It's most people go, town planning, what is that? And not many people have heard of it. So yeah, you're not the only one. That's pretty much, I get asked that question a lot. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you think you have any unforgettable stories related to sustainability?
I would have to go back to my activism days, because that's when I was young and free as well. All the best stories are when you're young and free. You've got the best to come, Rose. yeah, I think I just remember, so our first, the first time we managed to take the Pacific, we fundraised enough money to take some of the Pacific Island youth with us to Copenhagen for one of the global climate change conferences. And it was really rewarding. It was interesting. we had to buy them jackets, we had to buy them shoes, because they live in the islands, it's tropical and gorgeous all the time. They didn't own jackets, they walked around in thongs. So we had to, even those practical things you wouldn't think about, we had to make sure and take care of. And then we gave them media skills and trained them, and then we went over. And that was just so rewarding, setting up events, you know, in this massive convention center with global leaders walking around, and the Pacific Islanders being able to tell their story of how the land that they grew up on doesn't exist anymore because of sea level rise. And it was really rewarding to be able to give them a voice. But it was also really fun because we ran some pretty wild campaigns. I remember one of them was we teamed up with the Australian Youth Climate Coalition. It was actually our parent organisation that we founded Project Survival Pacific under. And so there was a lot of youth, and one of our media stunts was we went into the convention centre and we were all in our pyjamas, and inside was like, you know, all the big leaders from around the world. Barack Obama was the president of the States at that time. He was over there. And there we were lying on the ground in our pyjamas, and we had signs like, you know, you're all asleep, you need to wake up. And it was just, you know, such a contrast, and but also really liberating. I felt like a radical, and I felt like, you know, but whether or not it made a big difference, well, you know, we don't know. But at least I was there, and I felt at the time that I was doing something, and I felt I was doing something meaningful. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember there was a great a protest that was held from the centre of Copenhagen to the convention centre. It was quite a long way. It was -2 degrees. I think I got a little bit of frostbite on the ends of my fingers. It was cold. And as an Aussie, I'm not used to cold. So this was shocking. But I've got great photos from that time. And we had really fun signs like make love, not CO2, and all that cool stuff. So yeah, it would be my activism days that I remember in terms of unforgettable stories.
That's awesome. When was that?
2009.
Wow. Gotcha. Yeah. So that's awesome. What made you decide to get involved? I know you said earlier that you said you maybe like took a break before college and just kind of saw everything happening around you.
Yeah. I did have a few turning points there, but the one that I'd like to share with you is actually one that happened over my childhood and teenage years, which was more of a bit of a slow burn rather than a pivotal moment. And here in Australia, there's a place called Fraser Island, and it is the largest sand island in the world, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And my parents started taking us there on a family holiday from age 5. So the first time I went there was age 5, and we pretty much went every Christmas. Every Christmas holidays, we would go to Fraser Island. So I'd probably been there about 20 times over my life, and it meant that I got to see the place change. And, you know, Fraser Island is an absolutely majestic and wondrous place. It's got lakes that are so freshwater lakes. So it's an island, but in the middle is these beautiful freshwater pristine lakes. It is just divine. They have little penny turtles. It's amazing. They're different colors. They're like bright green, and then there's bright blue, like the intensity. Lake Mackenzie, if you Google it, you'll be like, whoa, and the white sand. And then they've got all these other fabulous places you can go, like Champagne Rocks, which is like, Eli Creek. It's just, the sand dunes are incredible. It's just amazing. And what I saw, though, every year that we went back, and this is a World Heritage Site, was that it was getting more and more urbanized. And more people were going. Now, I am by no means, and I'm pro-development. I absolutely am. But pro-development in the right place, cities, urbanized areas, World Heritage Site, one of a kind in the world, probably not somewhere I would want to see a lot of development. And I saw this Fraser Island, because I went there with my family, because I went there at such a young age, because it was such a beautiful, majestic place. It kind of felt like a bit of a spiritual home for me and a lot of memories. And to see it become destroyed, essentially in my mind, from what it was to what it is now, it actually broke my heart. And you know, there were roads being built all of a sudden. There never used to be any roads, just sand tracks through the island. Now there's roads and big resorts. And unfortunately, recently, the lakes became so polluted from people weeing in them that they were closed. So it was really hard to see that. And I think the saddest part about it is not just my loss, but that my son, or any future, you know, the children from any future generation won't get to enjoy what I did. So yeah, that's sort of, I guess, the massive driver for why I want to be involved in sustainability.
Right. When was the last time you went to Fraser Island?
We stopped going. It must be about 8 years ago now. Yeah. Look, it's still beautiful. They cleaned it up. But you know, it's not the place that it was when I was five. And that certainly happens. And I understand, as I said, I'm pro-development, but I think that was unfortunately that poorly managed, and I think there could have been other ways that it could have been protected a little more. Yeah,
definitely. What do you think interests you about sustainability? Like, what's one thing that stands out?
One thing that stands out. Oh gosh, I don't know. That's a hard question. One thing that stands out. Look, I think what interests me really, it comes down to my motivation for it, and it's really about finding that balance in the world where we can live in harmony and protect the beautiful parts of the environment, and also make sure that we preserve it so that we can facilitate the connection that happens between a person and the natural environment, which is what I was talking about that I had with Fraser Island. Obviously I can have it right now. I can look out at the trees and take the time to watch the wind blowing through them and the sun sparkling on them. We can have it anywhere. But yeah, I think it's about preserving that so that everybody can continue to have that connection, all of humanity, for the rest of our days.
Yeah, no, definitely. It sounds like you have like a passion for it. So it's a lot easier to see that. That's awesome. What would you say are some of your goals and objectives about your sustainability efforts?
Goals and objectives. Well, like I said, at the moment, I'm really lucky to be tutoring at Sydney Uni, and the course is called, oh my God, it's the best name for a course ever. It's called Building a Sustainable World. So I'm totally in my element there. And I think my goal is to really help and educate young people in this area, and to give them the skills that they need to be able to be powerful change makers, and to also help them facilitate their own, their own journey of change and empowerment and that type of thing, and be able to, yeah, create powerful leaders, because we need them. We need them to be able to win this. And achieve our goals in sustainability. And I think, and it's very rewarding working with people, motivating them and giving them this, helping them to find the skills in themselves that they need to be able to be a powerful change maker. Yeah.
Definitely. Coming from a university student, how do you think we could practice sustainability in our lives today?
Yeah. Okay. Good question. Look, there's so many answers to that, because there's so many things we can do. But I actually think it comes down to a couple of things primarily first. And it really, for me, it's about staying informed. Because the more educated we are, the more that we have the motivation to change. So the more that we understand the problem, the more that we can make a difference. And I think, and also it's changing all the time. So I think staying informed is really important, keeping yourself educated and up to date with what's happening. Also, the other thing I would say is, and this is a little bit harder, but there's ways to achieve it, is to maintain a positive mindset. Because the more that you get into this field of sustainability, is you can start to see a lot of destruction in the environment, and it can be quite disheartening. So making sure that you keep a positive mindset about it is really important. And the ways that you can do that is to seek out stories of positive change, because there is so much amazing stuff happening. People are making real differences, and we're seeing a lot of environmental areas be regenerated and come back flourishing. So it's important to seek out those stories so that you keep positive, because that's our motivation. We don't want to lose hope.
Yeah, no, definitely. What are some ways that you think we could stay informed, like, as a student?
Sure. Well, so I actually also do keynote speaking for a group called Future Crunch. Now, Future Crunch, their whole mandate is to seek out stories of positive change and communicate them. So they have a newsletter, but they're not the only one that facilitate this channel of positive news. So I would say seek out positive news stories and sign up to great newsletters, and you can get it into your inbox. There's people out there collating this information. Don't make it hard for yourself. Just get it delivered to your inbox. that's what I would say. Yeah.
Definitely. Sounds like the easiest way.
Yeah.
Do you have any final notes or any final thoughts?
Any final thoughts? Yeah, I just think the other thing that we can do is take the time to connect to nature, because that's really important. It's important for our mental health, it's important for our well-being, but it's also an important reminder of why we're doing what we're doing and why sustainability has to be our number one goal, and it needs to be an inevitable one.
Definitely. Well, I think that's all the questions we had today, but thank you so much for joining us today.
That's okay. Thanks for having me on. It was great. I got to talk about my favorite topic. Thank you, Rose.